Good afternoon, everyone. What I'm here today to present a quick overview of is an effort the Alliance put together to really help the sustainability of community-based organizations. When the recession hit, it became very clear to us very quickly that a lot of our organizations were at risk, and the services, the health and human services that our organizations provide, were also at risk. And we were looking for creative ways to go in and quickly kind of shore up some of our organizations so we could essentially survive to better times. And this is a bit of an overview of what we've been doing and a little bit of what we've learned about the changing landscape of capital needs in Hispanic communities. Just a little bit about the Alliance. For those of you who don't know us, our mission is to improve the health and well-being of Hispanic communities, work with others to secure health for all. We're the oldest and largest Hispanic network. We serve about 15 million people a year through our network. We're a bipartisan group, always have been. If we have a bias, our bias is that we believe in community-based solutions. Very proud of our organization that we've never accepted funding from alcohol and tobacco companies. And, I've worked at the Alliance for 28 years. I can tell you back when we didn't accept tobacco funding, we were the only national Hispanic group that didn't accept tobacco funding, and it's very nice to see that a lot more people came along. I should also point out we're always, right now we're the lead in the amicus brief in support of Mayor Bloomberg's soda policy, and we're seeing a lot of parallels between the beginning of the tobacco movement and what's going on with sugar and soda policy right now, but that's another talk. This is a little bit about what we see as our assets, our people, our operations, and certainly our values. Our members are both individuals and organizations. I'm sure what describes you is probably in this list. Feel free to join us. We're also very proud of our governance. We've received the Best in America seal, and the combined federal campaign, we've been listed as one of the organizations that is a best buy for your charitable dollar. And we were named by the Nonprofit Times as one of the 50 best nonprofits in the country to work for. And as a manager, I can tell you, actually, I'm very proud of that one, because that was a survey that was done without management knowing. It was a survey that was done of employees. So when that came up, as managers, we were very proud of that. The environment that we found ourselves in with Nuestros Tesoros, and by the way, Nuestros Tesoros means our treasures. So we see our people, our organizations, our culture, our values as our treasures, and this is an effort to support that. First of all, just so you know, in terms of scale, Hispanic communities, about 57 million, about one in every six individuals, about one of every four children, and over the past censuses represented 56% of the country's population growth. Also from 2010 to 2020, Hispanics are going to add 7.7 million people to the labor force, while non-Hispanic white labor force is going to decrease by 1.6 million. So there's this dynamic going on that for the future economic well-being of the country depends a lot on what we do now in terms of ensuring the well-being and preparedness of the Hispanic community today. Now, the environment we found ourselves in, and these numbers are updated, so they really haven't changed. About 1 in 10 Hispanics are currently unemployed. Foreclosures are about twice as high for Hispanics as about for non-Hispanic whites. And I can tell you, before the recession hit, about half of all home loans made to Hispanics were predatory loans. So when the recession hit, we had half of our community that were carrying predatory loans. And so for us, the foreclosure rates have been a significant impact in the community. 6 million Hispanic children currently live in poverty. Graduation rates continue to be a challenge. 14.5% of Hispanics have a bachelor's degree right now. As another aside, one thing you should know we're very committed to is education as a pathway to the future well-being of the Hispanic community. For those of you who might work in education or science education, we run a program that invests in kids. We give a very substantial tuition and an internship award of $42,500 that sees them throughout their entire college career. And this is the only national Hispanic program that actually doesn't ask about immigration status. So it's one of the few opportunities for a substantial investment in education that's given irregardless of immigration status. And in terms of the environment, about one in three Hispanics don't have health insurance. I can tell you October 1st, we're now getting well over 1,500 calls a day to help folks through counseling. This is going to be a challenging time. And we actually, you know, in terms of the one of the things I'm going to talk about is the importance of flexible dollars. For us, you know, we spent many years developing a reserve fund that we didn't have a decade ago. And it's that reserve fund that's allowing us to react over these next few months. For instance, we quadrupled our helpline staff in the first 2 weeks of October and have partnered with Univision in a pro bono campaign to help counsel folks about health insurance, because this is a particularly unique time in history. And if we don't do it now, it's not going to help to have the capacity a year from now. We just have to do it now. But it's only because that we were able to build some reserve funds, some flexible funds, that we were able to respond. And, you know, that's, as you'll see in the data, that's one of the critical pieces that we found is important to well-being. In terms of the philanthropy picture, it's never changed much. About 10 years ago, Hispanic contributions from major philanthropy accounted for about 1% of the portfolio. In a year that you look at it, it accounts for about 1 to 2% of the portfolio. And about 2/3 of those philanthropy dollars are program-specific deliverables, so there's not a lot of dollars going out that are flexible dollars, which is really what the community needs. As part of our work with Nuestros Tesoros in terms of helping organizations, we've done a couple of rounds of surveys. One was in the fall of 2011, one was the fall of 2013. We covered profiles of the organization's services, demand, capacity, and kind of a future-looking profile or the organizations. And here are a few of the things we found. 2/3 of our organizations reported an increase in demand in 2012. 85% expect that to keep going up, and about half report that they don't have the resources that they expected to need to meet demand this year. Now, this is critical not only because of the services service barriers that represents in Hispanic communities, it's also critical to the national recovery. I think one of the things that's lost in the debate is about 1 in 10 dollars in terms of employment are tied to nonprofits. So the well-being of the nonprofit sector is very much a part of the recovery, of the economic recovery of the country, and accounts for over 5% of the country's GDP. In working with nonprofits and in the survey work, some themes became very clear. One is that credit lines are being utilized much more by the community, and it's not because of any management issues on the part of the CBOs. It's almost all of it is tied to a longer time frame in terms of reimbursement for services at either the state, local, or federal level. So for us, you know, this is really kind of a policy issue that we're putting more focus on, trying to get more of a 30-day turnaround reimbursement for services rather than in some some communities that we surveyed, they were having 9 and 10 month delays in services. So they're having to float those dollars, and those are credit line dollars that could be interest that could be applied to services. In terms of funding cuts, this is nothing nobody would not expect. Funding cuts are continuing to shape the environment our communities are working in. But in particular, the lack of Medicaid expansion in places like Texas and the Medicaid restrictions are having a significant impact on the capacity of our agencies to do business. And it's not only the level of cuts, it's also the uncertainty. We have a lot of our CBOs in Texas, for example, that can't plan what their Medicaid budget's going to look like next year. There's no reason for them to expect that there's going to be level funding next year. So people are having to plan in uncertainty. And in fact, we've started a whole new management series that completely focuses just on that, managing in uncertain times. And it's all about how to move from a year-to-year management profile to a profile that manages in quarters, which is a very different way of managing money. And it's the biggest impact that it reduces flexibility a lot. So you're a lot more limited in what you're able to do. And we're certainly seeing a much greater demand. At the same time we're having more restrictions, we're seeing greater demand for services. One of the things that we did find from our agencies is about two-thirds of them did apply for stimulus funds. And there was actually a lot of success in terms of being grantees under stimulus dollars, which is the good part of the news. The bad part is that kind of artificially put a Band-Aid on things for a while. So with those stimulus dollars going, we're seeing a lot more of the impact in terms of what our agencies are able to manage for. And managing without the stimulus dollars is becoming a much more significant thing for community groups. Almost everybody reported increased demand in services. And when we first started asking this question, only about 10% of our agencies had a waiting list for services. This last time we asked, it was over 70% of our agencies now have waiting lists for services. So this is becoming much more of standard operating procedure. Whereas very few of our agencies had gone into debt and before the recession, now about half of our agencies report that. 84% have no endowment. And, you know, there's been a lot of interest in low-interest loans and whether or not PRIs, program-related investments, would make a big difference for community-based organizations. We found that the uncertainty of the environment means that about 3 in 4 of our community-based organization leaders said that they felt uncomfortable or their board had actually directed them not to pursue any additional debt or any low-interest loans. So the pathway to program-related investments, low-interest loans, represents an important area for development, but it's only going to really help about 1 in 4 Hispanic community-based groups because you have about 3 in 4 who are either unwilling to go into that area or whose boards have actually directed them not to. In terms of what we are doing, over the period of 4 years, we've invested about $250,000 in a group of 12 community-based agencies that we thought were critical in the regions that we're serving in order to survive. It's very flexible support. We actually worked with them in developing the profile of what they needed in order to do well. So there's not one program model. Everything is very much tailored to the agency and what they need. We have focused on management and development funding. In order to sustain services, almost all the agencies cut management to the bone. The impact is then that you have less capacity to do fundraising, you have less capacity for quality efforts, you have less capacity for innovation. So this was really directed towards those kinds of management dollars and being flexible dollars, us providing technical resources for agencies that were trying to innovate and reinvent how they were doing work. And we're moving now in an area where we're doing research to inform the field. This is the network of agencies that are a member of Nuestros Tesoros. Some of the impact, we know that we saved about 15,000 service slots. And this was a combination of advocacy. It was a combination of bringing in accounting teams and redoing accounting so that agencies were able to capture larger reimbursement streams, or working with policymakers so that they could see some of the buckets of dollars they saw as silos were actually a bit more flexible in terms of their legislative authority mandate, and helping that to spread a little bit further. But we're not seeing a lot more capacity to be able to do to move the cups around any longer. You know, folks have really cut services to the bone. They've redefined, shifted services as much as they can. So accounting measures, reorganizing things, there's a limited capacity of how much further we can go with that. We did invest in enhanced management information technology, you know, which was an area that a lot of agencies hadn't invested in because they were focusing on the services dollars, and that we saw a lot of savings that did come in from that. Communication capacities, also another area that folks hadn't invested in, but that we've seen it able to bring in new donors and new sustainable models of partnerships. You know, one of the interesting lessons we got, our Brownsville agency is one example. They did a communications campaign, and they brought in a new donor who was the largest employer in the Brownsville area. And as they got to know each other, they realized the quality of the services that were at this community health center, and they actually hired the community health center to do its workplace wellness program. So it's an area in the for-profit field that our agency would have never gone into, and it's those kinds of partnerships we're helping to move forward. And in just in terms of the flexibility of dollars, you know, this is one of the examples. After Superstorm Sandy wasn't on our work plan, we didn't know that one that was going to happen. But you know, after that happened, our agency in New York, New Jersey was able to. They had established a food bank, and they were able to reorganize their food bank. So in the aftermath of it, it helped a lot of the families. They actually had 500 families that they brought in a caseworker model. The food bank served thousands in the aftermath, but then they had 500 families that they were able to work with in terms of housing, mental health services, food services, all those kinds of emergency services. But again, this was only possible because our money was not in a silo, but it was flexible funding that was investing in these organizations whose mission we believed in. One of the things that I can offer is that we have brought together an Hispanic Purchasing Alliance, and we've now joined with the American Red Cross, Campfires, Boy Scouts of America, with the Boys and Girls Club. So together we now have the purchasing ability of a Fortune 500 company. And we have found that the purchasing cooperative has saved our organizations. If they weren't in a purchasing cooperative before, it saved them on between 20 and 25% of their costs. And if they were in a purchasing cooperative, if joining this even larger one, it saved them 5 to 10% of costs. In terms of the road ahead, what we know is that the pace of cutbacks is increasing. One of the things we really know, glue money is essential. You know, people are being able to sustain little pieces of programs here and there. So money that helps organizations bring them together in a more cohesive manner so that when it faces the person being served, it's not so disjointed, it meets more of the need. That kind of glue money is essential. And I've covered some of these other things. I think what I will focus on is just to say that policy trends are reshaping the landscape, and we have a very big job to do in terms of Medicaid and Medicaid expansion because that is really having a significant impact in the community. We're responding with continuing to do infrastructure support. We're putting together a policy network. We're doing expansion capital for agencies with loans between $1 and $1.4 million. That are allowing them to start new business streams that will bring in new revenue. We've put together an innovation fund because we know agencies need an opportunity to take risk, and this is a fund to help them do risk, and we're doing research to bring to the field. And, you know, we do all this because, in the end, this is going to help us serve people better, and we've been working with the clients in our agencies, and they're becoming advocates for their own programs. This is a woman who did advocacy around adult daycare programs. It's our website, and it's our phone number. We're now counseling people in English and Spanish around signing up for the ACA. So if you need folks who need Spanish capacity, because the government's not there yet, on Spanish counseling, we are available with this toll-free number. If you need, if your agency needs help with a purchasing cooperative, you can find more information at our website. Thanks so much.